Good afternoon. My name is Debbie, and I'll be your conference operator today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the Heckam for Purchase conference call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question during this time, simply press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, press the pound key. Thank you, Ms. Cromwell. You may begin your conference.
Thank you, Debbie. My name is Betsy Cromwell, and I am in the Program Support Division here at HUD headquarters. And I will be sort of reading through the information that we're trying to give you today. As you know, the Heckam for Purchase program begins on January 1st. And as much as possible, we wanted to get as much information out to the counselors because you all will have to be ready to begin any sort of counseling that has to be done on these type of loans probably not on January 1st, but January 2nd. What I want to tell everyone is that this call is being recorded, and it will be made available on HUD's website. We will send a blast email out to all of the Heckam counseling agencies for which we have good emails, much like the way you got notice of this conference call today, when that information is available, and we'll give you the exact URL for that. It'll be on the HUD website. Okay, I'm here with a cast of folks who are involved in the Heckam program, so we're hoping that any questions that come up that you may have, we'll be able to answer. And with that, I'm just going to go ahead and get started. Hopefully you all received the PowerPoint presentation that was sent out this morning, and you can follow along with that presentation because that's what I'll be working from. Okay. First, I'm going to go over some of the basic major program requirements for Heckam for Purchase with you, and I'm going to focus on specific issues that HUD wants counselors to focus on to help your clients avoid some potential pitfalls and risks. Since this loan product is not a traditional Heckam refinance product, we think there's some important information that is typically discussed in pre-purchase counseling sessions that now needs to be included in Heckam sessions for those seniors who are interested in this program. And it's going to vary widely who your customers are. You may have a senior that hasn't bought a home in 30 or 40 years and is coming in for a Heckam for Purchase. You may have a senior that's a first-time home buyer. So we really want the seniors who are interested in this program to be informed about the home buying process, what to expect from real estate professionals involved in the process, and to understand costs associated with both the home purchase and the ongoing obligations as a homeowner. We also want the clients to be made aware by you, the counselors, of any red flags for possible mortgage scams that they may be involved in or come across. So kind of just to put your mind at rest, these are still Heckam loans, and the Heckam basics are still there. You know, the maximum claim amount still exists, the counseling requirement, obviously, the calculation of principal limit, the borrower age requirement, payment of taxes and insurance, which takes on a whole new meaning under this part, payment of plan options, if there's any additional funds, and principal residence requirement. The things that are different for this Heckam for Purchase will be eligible properties, and we will go over that. There's a new person in the transaction that you don't have with a Heckam refinance product, and that's a realtor. Another thing that we'll stress in this conference call is the importance of a home inspection. There's different closing cost items, There are different requirements about the assets that the home buyers will need to purchase. One of the requirements is that the seller has to do required repairs that are structural in nature prior to closing. All right, and I just got in off the press here. Evidently, the maximum claim amount is going to change in a mortgagee letter that's coming out very soon. And the maximum claim amount, and Erica can speak to this more later, is the lesser of the sales price, the appraised value, or the FHA mortgage limit.
Right, and currently, what we use for the maximum claim amount is the lesser of the appraised value or the mortgage limit. So look forward to a new mortgagee letter, which will add in that third layer where we're going to also consider the sales price.
Thanks, Erica. Good. Okay. As a little background, the HECM for Purchase program allows seniors who are 62 or older to buy a new principal residence using loan proceeds from the reverse mortgage. The program was designed to allow seniors to purchase a new principal residence and obtain a reverse mortgage, and to do this with a single transaction. So there will be only one closing. Because in the past several years, we had begun to see more and more HECM loans where seniors were moving to be closer to family or to downsize. They were purchasing a new home with a forward mortgage and then immediately turning around and paying that forward mortgage off with a HECM. So we were very interested in getting legislative authority to create a program where they could purchase a home and get a HECM through in one single loan transaction with one set of closing costs. And this program was created through the Housing and Economic Recovery Act that was passed by Congress in July this year. So we did sort of appeal to Congress as part of the FHA modernization legislation for this to be included. So we're very happy that this program is available now. Okay. Some highlights of the HECM for Purchase program. A senior can purchase an existing 1-4 unit property. Just like a regular HECM, the property has to serve as the principal residence. When the loan closes, there can only be the HECM first and second lien against the property. There cannot be any other mortgages against the property or... Well, there can't be any other mortgages again. Just the HECM first and second. Seniors have to provide a cash monetary investment at closing, and that monetary investment has to come from an allowable funding source, which is in another slide. And also, the senior must occupy the property within 60 days of closing. Okay, what are eligible property types? Basically, this is the same as with traditional HECM loans. The change here is that for new construction, the lenders will only be able to take loan applications for a property where the construction has been completed and there's a certificate of occupancy or whatever constitutes a certificate of occupancy for that particular jurisdiction. Ineligible properties, again, cooperative units. While we know that co-ops have been granted for regular HECMs, at this time they are ineligible for HECM for Purchase. Another ineligible is a manufactured housing built before 1976 or a manufactured house that's lacking a permanent foundation. No bed and breakfast or boarding houses, which is the same as what exists today. Now, the monetary investment requirement, this is a big change from HECM refinancing. And the monetary investment is the difference between the principal limit and the sales price of the property. It also includes any of the HECM loan-related fees that aren't financed or offset by any other funding source. And the borrower can provide a larger investment amount in order to retain part of that HECM proceed for future draws. And again, I had mentioned what allowable funding sources, and this is something that lenders are required to verify the sources of funds. So it's really important when you're counseling to talk about this with your clients. Borrowers can use only their own money for this funding source that can be obtained from a sale of assets, withdrawal from their savings or retirement account. The bigger list here is what is not allowable, okay, what the ineligible funding sources are. For HECM for purchase, we do not allow any gifts, any loan discount points, any interest rate buy-downs. Closing cost assistance is not eligible. Builder incentives can't be used. Seller contributions or seller financing. Credit card advances cannot be used. And any secured or non-secured loans on another asset, such as a car or home equity line. Now, for you as a counselor, we talked about you all being able to more or less counsel your client on any sort of risks that might exist sort of to them or pitfalls in this program. So it's important when the client comes in, just like with any other HECM or any forward loan, forward mortgage, to evaluate the client's financial situation. Do they actually have the resources for the monetary investment? And if so, have those resources come from an allowable source? It's important to educate the client about the home buying process. And I know if you don't do pre-purchase counseling, you may have to talk to some of the other counselors and get some training on some pre-purchase counseling to become familiar with the home buying process. Just like we stress with the HECM refinance product, you have to educate clients on their obligations, that they will be responsible for their taxes and insurance, their homeowner association fees, and a new one that they may not have had to pay in the past is any kind of home maintenance costs. We also want you as a counselor to educate the clients, the seniors, on the role of a real estate agent in this transaction. You probably should familiarize yourself with what the laws in your state are for, you know, what the realtors have to follow in your state. Because in most cases, a realtor is representing the seller. And so you may want the client to ask the agent, the realtor, to disclose the information about their business relationship. You know, who exactly are they representing? You would also want to educate the senior on the role of a buyer's agent, and if a client has a buyer's agent, they should have a written agreement for this. And there is a cost to that, but in some cases, it may be well worth it. I was talking about state laws, I know that in most states, or I think in most states, like, for instance, and for example, at an open house, if there's a realtor that's working there and someone comes in to look at the property and they start talking and give a lot of information about themselves to the realtor, that realtor can disclose and is under obligation to disclose that information to the seller. If that same person would put in a purchase contract and kind of lowballed the price, and but had it in fact told the realtor there was they had plenty of assets, you know, that realtor can disclose that, or is under obligation to disclose that to the seller. So, you know, it's important to kind of get to know those laws in your state. In counseling clients about selecting a home for purchase, we can't stress this enough that clients really should get a home inspection. And the reason for that is twofold. One, it determines the repairs that are needed as well as the magnitude of the repairs, you know, whether there's structural defects and that kind of thing. Versus, and in addition to that, it helps the buyer in their negotiation of a purchase price with a seller in the situation where there are home repairs needed. And then what if the home needs repairs? To be eligible for FHA insurance, the house has to meet the FHA minimum property requirements. And if there are major property deficiencies that threaten the safety of the homeowner or jeopardize the soundness and security of the property, the repairs must be completed by the seller prior to closing, and the appraisal will be subject to the completion of these repairs. Examples of major of these kind of major safety issues are like no running water, a hole in the roof, no primary heating source, no lighting. On the other hand, if the deficiencies do not threaten the safety soundness of the property but are required to comply with FHA minimum property requirements, they can be completed after closing if the cost of repair is less than 15% of the maximum sales amount. And an example of that could be loose roof shingles, broken garage door, low water pressure. Okay, and okay, the next slide, writing an offer. In counseling clients about this, we recommend, strongly advise, again, that sales are sales contracts should state the offer is contingent on satisfactory inspection conducted by a qualified inspector. There may be other contingencies that the client wants. And the borrower may want to have their attorney review it. And again, it may add costs, but in the long run, it may be worth it. Another thing that you can counsel the client on is that they can cancel the transaction at any time prior to closing, but that cancellation may affect earnest money deposit. I think Erica has a little bit more information about that. Yeah, you can talk about it.
One of the questions that has come up to headquarters in looking at HECM for purchase is FHA going to require the real estate certification and amendatory clause that is currently used on forward mortgages? And after much debate, we definitely found a lot of benefit in incorporating those two documents for the HECM for purchase program. One of the things as a counselor that you can advise your client on is I would try to, and unfortunately the way things work, they may not get to you until after they've signed a sales contract, but in counseling them, it is wise to definitely encourage them and to ensure that they speak with their lender about signing a real estate certification and the amendatory clause. What the real estate certification, and correct me if I'm wrong, Eric, it talks about everything as far as what they've agreed to being true and factual in that real estate certification. So if they agreed to fix something within the home and there was a certain price that they were going to do it for, all of that should be disclosed to them in that sales contract. And that's what everyone is certifying to, that they've done just that and they've disclosed everything that needed to occur. If the home had I'm going out on a limb on this one. If the home had some kind of structural defect, it should have been disclosed to them. They need to be aware of things of that nature. When it comes to the amendatory clause, your client is protected, because the way the HECM program works today, and it will work with the purchase program, is an appraisal cannot be obtained until after they complete counseling with you. And the amendatory clause gives them a way of coming out of the transaction only if there is an issue with the appraised value. Eric Davidson can probably talk and give you a better example of how that works, because there are certain things that FHA will not get in the middle of if it's over the property itself. So I'm going to try to give an example. Eric will help me if I get it wrong. If, in fact, there's a good faith estimate and they believe that the home is going to be worth more than what's on that good faith estimate. Once the appraisal is done, it comes in less. They're required to bring more to that table for the monetary investment. That would be an instance where, under the amendatory clause, if they wanted to cancel this type of transaction, they could and they should receive their earnest money back. If it, I'm trying to think of another minor instance where FHA would not get in the middle of it. If, in fact, the seller and your client agree that something should be repaired within the home, and the seller then changes their mind and they do not want to make that repair, whatever that item may be, whether it's a major or something minor, and they want to back out of the transaction, they have to work out that deal amongst themselves. That is a type of situation where they couldn't hang their hat on the amendatory clause and say, well, they didn't agree to it, has a monetary value, I want to back out of that type of transaction. That's not really what it's designed to do. Hopefully some of the counselors on this call will have seen the amendatory clause. We can certainly get a copy to Betsy, and so when this is released, you can be able to take a look at the language, and it talks about the appraised value.
Is it a HUD form, the amendatory clause?
It really doesn't have a HUD number.
Okay.
But it came out in a mortgagee letter.
Okay.
An old mortgagee
letter. We can get that information to you.
And that's
what we're saying here is it's a standard practice in forward mortgages. So if you're not familiar with it, maybe some folks on the pre-purchase side in your counseling organizations are. The other thing that we want you to talk to your clients about is the closing costs. And in addition to the standard HECM closing costs that you would have in a HECM refinance, with a HECM for purchase, there will also be recordation fees, transfer taxes, and these vary from state to state. It's usually a percentage of the transaction, and you should make yourself familiar with what those numbers are in your state so you can counsel your clients. The other issue that you need to advise your clients is that unlike a HECM refinance, there is no 3-day right of rescission in a HECM for purchase. They may or may not even be aware of this, but it's probably a good thing to tell them. And finally, as a counselor, and particularly because this is a new program, and it, you know, there could be all kinds of situations that come up out there. We are asking you to pay extra attention to, you know, to any first-time home buyers, to kind of understand their situation and get as much information as possible to make sure this isn't some sort of scam or inappropriate transaction. Also, any inappropriate source of funds that the client is kind of vague about whether they have the money to use in for the monetary requirement. There may be something more there that Or if they come out and say, well, the builder's going to give us $50,000, you know, that kind of thing. Also, this program could be open to, but there could be problems with property flipping, and we're trying to make folks very aware of that, that, you know, the property may not have had the work done to it that the buyer, or that the seller is saying has been done. So it's very important to pay attention to that. And in situations where a client is being rushed to closing, which I know you all see on the HECM refinance side probably pretty frequently, but it's just important to kind of get as much information as possible from your client to make sure that they're not being coerced into something or, that they in fact want to do this transaction and understand what they're getting into. If you see any sort of questionable activity, complaints should be reported to your HUD representative, and they can also be reported to HUD's Office of Inspector General hotline, which is the number for that is 800-347-3735. And, of course, in any situation where you would see any kind of elder abuse, it's important to get to make the call to your local senior service center number to report that. And that's it for my presentation. Now, if you all have questions, we will do our best to respond. Operator, any questions?
If you would like to ask a question, please press the star and the number one on your telephone keypad. And your first question comes from Kristen Overton.
Yeah. Actually, it's two questions. The first question is, does that mean that they cannot buy a home that is a flipped home?
They have to wait the time frame that was, dictated in Mortgagee Letter 2008-33. Let's see. It must be the current owner of record. May sell properties that will be financed using FHA-insured mortgages. Any resale of property may not occur 90 or fewer days from the last sale. So, for instance, if you run across a senior that you're counseling and they say, oh, wonderful, I just obtained this home and I would love to get a HECM on it, one of the questions that I would ask is, are they aware or do they know when that home was last sold? Some information can be downloaded from the local real estate and assessment office. You can see where properties are transferred therein. If they don't have that information, it's very important to get.
Okay.
I'm sorry, Christine. Someone's slipping me a note. Different for short sales. Okay, so Erica's going to talk about short sales because I'm not well versed on that part of it. But definitely be aware, and I just want to put something else out there. It might be, in fact, that they did buy or the home that they purchased, it might be over 91 days. But I would also ask them, when they purchased this home, and it's definitely if this home wasn't financed through them and through the seller, were they told as part of that agreement to buy this house that they have to obtain a reverse mortgage to pay off that financing on whomever financed the original sale of it? There was something that came to headquarters' attention rather recently. I believe it's in Georgia, where there's a company that is purchasing these homes. They're doing minimal repairs to them, and they're providing financing for them. And in turn, they're saying to the seniors, oh, you have to, as an obligation under, or somehow they have it up in their contract, you're required to obtain a reverse mortgage. That is a violation of this program. They're being coerced into getting something as a requirement for that loan. That is not acceptable for this program. And I'm going to let Eric talk a little bit about short sales.
Hi. Just want to be very brief and kind of distinguish between the two. Don't confuse a flip transaction or flipping a property the same as short sale. These are two different approaches and two separate scenarios. Lately, we've been getting some calls here in headquarters addressing what is HUD's guidance, what is our understanding as far as how to facilitate short sale. We are currently drafting provisions and looking into that area, but just for there, just so you can understand, there is a difference between the current mortgage allows addressing flip properties versus short sales, if you're presented with that question. And make it easier, short sales is usually dealing with resolving a distressed scenario, where on the property flipping is usually a scenario where the property has been acquired and is in any given inventory portfolio.
Okay.
You had a second question?
Yeah, the other one was the only counselor in my agency, and I don't know where to find pre-purchase counseling. I mean, pre-purchase education on so that I can counsel on it. Do you have any suggestions?
The national industry standards that are on the website. Let me think. NCHEC. NCHEC.org. And they're the national industry standards for home buyer counseling. You also can get training through NeighborWorks, and there are a lot of other sources too for pre-purchase counseling training.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Uh-huh.
Your next question comes from Hans Zuzelman. Sir, your line is open.
Are you talking to me? Hello?
Yes, hello. Do you have a question?
It's Buzz Zeman. Betsy seemed to imply that it was critical to advise client about lender relationships with the realtors. Realtor relationships with the clients in various states. Many of us counsel across states. Should we be reluctant, or should we not do counseling in other states on HECM for purchase? It seems like there's a lot of things we won't know about other states.
Okay, that's a good question, Buzz, because you're right. There are a lot of counselors that do counseling across phone counseling across the country. In those cases, I think it's important to just advise the client to find out as much as they can about the realtor relationship, you know, who that realtor is representing, and, you know, and get a straight story, and possibly even for the to advise the client to get some information about, you know, realtor laws essentially in their state, to just make them aware that that person does not necessarily represent them. They are representing the seller, and if they really want their interests to be represented by a professional, they need to get a buyer agent.
Is the home inspection we're talking about, well, this is different from the appraisal, right? This has to do with the first-time home buyer or buying a home kinds of issues.
Right. This is not the appraisal. This is a whole separate, different person.
Right. Doesn't this vary from state to state as well?
The inspections? There may be some requirements that vary from state to state, but home inspections, I would think, are done across the country at this point.
And you're looking at them from top to bottom.
Right.
To figure out the life expectancy on your major
roof,
yeah. Appliances. They can tell if there was a previous defect in the structure. I mean, they're really helpful. We're still requiring the appraisal for this product, but that's just an extra protection measure for your senior, so they're aware of exactly the condition of the home, and not just saying, oh, I like it because I'm walking through it, I think it meets my expectations. Well, we all know that that's not the best way to go around things, and we're not professionals, and a home inspector has been trained in this area to make these kind of qualified decisions and say where something is defective or if there's a short life expectancy on them. And if it's their heating source, I would want to know that if before buying a home, if that person is telling me, well, it's going to be around for 2 years, you need to start planning to pay for that expense. If it goes down, your senior should have that kind of information. Because a lot of times when they're getting this HECM, if they don't have enough money after the fact because they're using all of their loan proceeds and one is there, if it's a major heating source or if there's a pipe that ruptures in their home or something that they just weren't prepared for can cause another financial hardship on them. And we just want them to have the most information possible.
Yeah, have you considered requiring actually for, you know, identifying first-time home buyers and actually requiring that they get this information, education, in addition to the reverse mortgage counseling?
You mean requiring that they get what kind of education?
The first-time home buyer classes, so forth, that are
first-time home buyer classes? We haven't given that. What? Buzz, we're counting on you all in these counseling sessions.
You know, I'm realizing it's quite the challenge, and I don't know. I'm on the verge of thinking that I shouldn't even do these for states that I'm not familiar with, because it's quite a greater responsibility. Quite a different form of education, one I'm not trained in.
But I think one thing that we would consider is that we're anticipating there will not be an awful lot of first-time home buyers using this program for a couple of reasons. The primary being, in most cases, the down payment that they're going to have to come in with is pretty substantial. And we anticipate that a lot of them will be getting that through the sale of another home, either that they recently sold or you know, plan to sell. And the other is that if they are a first-time home buyer, it would be something that would have to be looked at very closely by the lender as well, because you know, it doesn't make sense for someone to, at the age of 72. To be moving in as a first-time home buyer. But I guess that depends on the situation, but I can't imagine that would be the scenario. That would be the exception more so than the rule.
Sure. Well, with that in mind, it may be all the more reason to refer or defer to a local housing counseling agency.
Yeah, we would agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Is the amendatory clause a nationwide document, something that's true everywhere?
Yes. We'll find the mortgagee letter that has the information, because it's the language that you'll find in it was drafted by HUD, so it cannot be changed.
So, thank you much.
Well, and we'll blast an email out to you with that link to that mortgagee letter.
We also have a form entitled For Your Protection, Get a Home Inspection, and we'll make sure that that's available to you as well.
I might mention, I didn't get the PowerPoint. Is that available on the HUD website?
No, Buzz, but I can send that out to you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Your next question comes from Karen Singleton.
Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, I had the same problem. I did not receive the PowerPoint presentation, and that was my question.
I'll just let you know that our blast emails go out to the person who is listed as the HUD contact person on the HCS system.
Correct, and she forwarded it to me. It only had the mortgagee letter. It did not have the PowerPoint.
We didn't send the mortgagee letter out with us. There was a PowerPoint that
Helene.
We sent out this morning.
From Helene Renault at NFCC. She forwarded it.
Okay. I don't know what she sent. But we can, certainly I can ask Helen to try and send that to you again. Because we don't have email accounts for, well, we should. What organization are you with?
I'm with Consumer Credit Counseling Service of Greater New Orleans, and our point of contact should be Jan Britt.
Do you have her email address?
Yes.
Can you give it to me?
Sure. It's Jan.
J-A-N?
Correct. At C-C-C-S, that's Consumer Credit Counseling Service, N-O.org.
Okay, I can send that to her.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from Denise Surrett.
Yes, the question is, you had talked about some things that needed to be on the contract, and I was surprised that you did not put down that they needed to have a mortgage contingency. And I feel that that's really important because there could be reasons why these could be turned down during,
I was not making a list of that was all-inclusive. I was just saying that we really want to stress that these contracts should be contingent upon a home inspection. But I mean, and I did say that they could have many other contingencies. So
I think that's very important is the mortgage contingency.
Sure, and the sale of primary residence. I mean,
there
could be a whole slew of them.
Okay, that's all. That's all.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from Joanne Baker.
Hi, I actually have two questions. One is the loan limit of 417, is that still in effect?
Yes.
Okay. And two, you dealt with the short sale, but what about REO property and the disclosure of the condition of the property? How would you handle that?
When you speak of REO, you speak of a HUD REO or you speak of a bank REO?
Either one, actually. You know, the bank takes the property back. They don't know the condition of the property to really give a disclosure, number one. And number two, we're also dealing with it could be the 90, less than 90 days.
Right. The less than 90 days, if it's a bank-owned property, is typically not going to be an issue. The bigger issue is obviously the condition of the property. And when the appraiser does the appraisal, and it's certainly true on HUD REO properties, they will make note in the appraisal as to whether or not it's FHA insurable.
Okay.
And they will also say, they might also cite that there are certain repairs that need to be done to make it FHA insurable. And that's when it happens that depending on the extent of repairs, they might need to be done by the seller, in which case that could be an issue because the bank may not want to do it, or it could be something that the seller is willing to accept, and as long as it complies and stays within the program guidelines, that would be fine. The big concern is that they get a home inspection and make sure that they're comfortable with the condition of the home before entering into the contract, hopefully, or before, going through with the sale.
Okay, that's great.
Okay.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from Vicki James.
Hi, I think you've already answered it. I was having a hard time wrapping my head around first-time home buyers, past the age of 62. having lots of money. But basically, in the contingency, so mostly it will be people who are probably selling their residence and buying down, probably, maybe.
Right.
Right, okay. And so that would probably be one of the contingencies based on the ability to sell their primary residence in order to get enough down payment.
Right.
Because I could see, I'm so glad that this is in here on the 90 days on the flipping and everything, because there's already been some people that have bought houses and started marketing to people and trying to make it a condition that they had a reverse mortgage, that they get a HECM. And so I could see them running out and trying to market this. So this is something that people who are flipping and maybe not licensed realtors will probably try to market. So,
yeah, exactly. And if you become aware of these kind of situations, we've tried to anticipate
as much as we can think of, you know, in terms of scams. But, you know, wherever there's money to be made, there are folks who try to find a different way to a way around it. So,
thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Your next question comes from Linda Cade.
Yes, I had a question about, since people are coming in with funds for this, how does it work? Can they, I know that you're not tax people, but can they get a tax deduction? Can they use it as a income tax deduction since they're coming in with funds for the closing costs?
I'm not a licensed professor, you can qualify to make this thing.
They'd have to check with the tax law.
IRS.
Yeah, it doesn't, I'm not really sure. I mean, you know, it's
they're not paying the interest. You know, that's, so, but I mean, at least at the time, I mean,
right.
So I don't know. They would have to check with a professional tax accountant, I would think.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
And your next question comes from Charmaine Wixom.
Yes. I just wondered, is a real estate agent required in this program?
No.
I guess the real question is, does it have to be an arm's length transaction, or can they purchase from their family? I've already had someone come about that. That's why I'm asking.
They can purchase from family.
And do they need a real estate agent?
No.
Okay.
Well, they just
and then my other
sale
yeah.
contract.
Okay. And then my other question.
Typically prepare that.
Okay. My other question was on the home inspection. Is that like it is now with regular loans? Is it's just suggested but not required, or is it required?
Suggested strongly.
Just suggested. Okay. All right. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Your next question comes from Josh Acevedo.
Gus Acevedo.
Okay.
Gus, a couple questions. Now, did you say earlier that the loan limits are going to increase for this particular program, or is it going to be still 417?
The FHA mortgage limits for January 1 will still be 417. The only areas that will really be affected and see a bump up will be in Guam, the Virgin Islands, and Hawaii. And we have a mortgagee letter that's going to come out that will actually address that particular area. But for now, 417 will remain across the board, unless it's in those areas.
All right. Then the next question is, can you please repeat that website that you said earlier for the training? Was it NetCheck?
Oh, for training, NCHECK, N-C-H-E-C.
NW.org.
Or go to NW.org and look up NCHECK.
Okay. Let's see. As far as the training goes, are there any other training guidelines or manual that we'll be receiving from HUD?
We'll be getting the protocol out to you sometime in the new year, and as part of the protocol, there will be information in there about HECM for purchase counseling.
All right. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
Your next question comes from Cheryl Jessica Chapman.
Hi, this is Cheryl.
Hi, Cheryl.
Hi, Cheryl.
Hi. I just didn't get the PowerPoint, so I wanted to request that.
Okay, what group are you with?
You know, I'm going to have to check with my supervisor and get the email, because we did get the original that you guys sent out yesterday. It was just this link apparently wasn't forwarded back to us.
Okay, we're going to try and post the PowerPoint online. Excuse me.
along with the audio. So it'll be available on the HUD website, and we'll get information out to the field so that people know where to go and find that.
Excellent. Thank you.
The next question comes from Jane Owens.
Yes, I was wondering, I don't understand this, where it says only HECM first and second liens against the property. What's a second HECM lien?
With existing practices, whenever someone obtains a HECM, whether it's a HECM for refinance or a traditional HECM, what's put in place is a first lien and a second lien. And the second lien is used for the purpose of the department. Should the lender default and not make payments, we need that second lien in place in order to advance payments to the borrower. So it's nothing new for the program itself. It's always been in place. And hopefully that's being discussed in your counseling session so they actually know that. The first one is really being used by the lender, and they're advancing funds. There's an outstanding balance that's growing. It's accruing interest. And the second one is really used for the department.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Your next question comes from Janice Pratt.
Thank you. I just wanted to confirm, is credit something that goes into consideration when doing a HECM for purchase?
Credit in terms of, the traditional analysis is not, but we would encourage that, if the borrower or the client is willing, that they, kind of discuss their financial situation. We're more concerned with the fact that they be aware of the costs of owning a home in the case of a first-time home buyer, but also of the charges going into this purchase and the flexibility of the HECM product itself. But we don't have any specific criteria to analyze their credit, no.
All right. I would just add one other thing. If you might want to mention that we're still going to pull a credit report,
right,
and the lender will still look to see if there's any delinquent federal debt, and that could be an issue because those would still have to and should be satisfied,
right,
depending on if it's against the property itself.
And that's an eligibility issue.
So I just wanted to add that part to it. Is there another question?
Nope. Thank you.
Thank you.
The next question comes from Cheryl Bisek.
Hi. I do phone counseling nationwide, and for the most part, when someone tells me that there's Joe Schmo and they're 65 years old, I really have to kind of believe them. I have had recently a series of calls from people that I seriously doubted I was talking to the actual homeowner and really believed I was probably talking to the loan officer. But, of course, I have no way of verifying that.
Right.
And the situation was such that I definitely felt that there was some fraud going on. But when I approached my manager about it, she said, she would forward the information to you, but that for the most part it wasn't like I was in a position to say that I would decline doing the counseling just because I felt the whole situation was shaky. So at what point are we counselors and at what point are we detectives?
That's a good question. Did whoever this was pay for the counseling?
This was in the last 3 days before our agency instituted the payment, and in three of four cases, the homeowner had no credit history, had no previous mortgages, had bought houses that they were telling me were worth like $140,000, but they only owed $70,000. They bought it 4 months before. They were living in apartments. Their children set it up. I mean, very, very scammy,
Mm-hmm.
But I felt like, well, you know, I didn't know really what to do with that other than to inform my manager of my feelings about it. You know, I didn't have any concrete proof of anything and didn't know really what to do with it.
I guess the other thing I'm thinking that you could possibly do is, you know, have your manager make the home ownership center aware of it, you know, of this name of the alleged client, in case, you know, that file came in for review, or to, you know, so they could flag that file in case a case number was assigned by a lender.
Yeah, because it was the same lender for all three of these clients.
Oh, that's a little shaky.
And it was like the same lender but yet they kept giving me different fax numbers, and it was all very, very suspicious.
Wow. Yeah. Well, I mean, if do you know where in the country this was happening?
Atlanta, Georgia.
Down in Atlanta. Everybody here was saying Georgia, so evidently there must be some activity. You guys are aware of that.
Report the concern about the lender to the home ownership center.
Okay. Did you hear that? That you should report the concern about the lender to the home ownership center in Atlanta.
Okay. All right. I can do that. Because I kept a lot of the information because it just seemed so fishy.
Yeah.
And like I say, you know, it was like, well, you know, at what point do I have to try and, you know, squeeze this information out of them as to what their situation is? Because they all acted like, they really didn't know. How did it get set up? They didn't, you know, they didn't have any money, but yet they have $70,000 in equity.
Yeah, right.
So I just went ahead. I did the counseling, and then, you know, an interesting afterthought, too, is that I sent out the post-counseling packages with their certificates, and they all were returned as undeliverable.
Okay. Interesting. They were,
you need to get certificates.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So basically you're saying, you know, just report those incidents and do what I do, and
that's right.
And let you guys handle it there from that point.
That's right.
Exactly.
Okay.
Provide as much documentation as you can to the home ownership center. And
okay.
Follow up.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from Sherry Young.
Hello. A couple of questions. One is, I know you had said, and it says that you can't have any closing cost assistance. What about IDA money, the individual development accounts?
No, I don't think so.
They use their IDAs?
Oh, I would think so, because that's money that they've deposited with the idea of purchasing a house or using it for, education, and then in some cases it's matched.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So
the match is on the HUD 1.
Yeah.
That
no, I.
Gift,
that's definitely.
Or will that be considered their own funds?
I would think that would be.
It's recognized as a qualified savings vehicle, so I would say yes. This is helpful.
Okay. And why can't, if the down payment assistance provider, like the city or the county, will take a third place position, why can't they use the soft seconds?
That's potential for the future, but right now, because the program is so new, what we're trying to do is keep it as tightly wound as possible, get a few cases on the books, work out the bugs, and then we'll make it a little more flexible. But for now, the decision was made that we're just going to keep it as tightly wound as possible and not allow any other form of assistance or down payment.
And can that be, is that in writing?
It's in the mortgagee letter right now. It's going to be tightened up in the new mortgagee letter.
Yeah, because I think we might run into some trouble with our city money, since they can't discriminate against age. If
you feel that would need to define
that
more clearly.
Pardon?
You feel it would be need to be defined more clearly?
Yes, ma'am.
Guide.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Because if you could look into that, we sure would appreciate it, so we don't have any troubles. We really, in Houston, that's a big component of our first-time home buyer education. And if we just have something that we rely on that says no, then, you know, that's a HUD decision, not our decision or city's decision or county's.
Right, and that is our decision to not allow any other form of down payment assistance. So.
Okay. So, but they don't consider IDA as down payment assistance?
No.
Okay. Can you put on there that IDAs are okay so we don't run into that problem?
Typically, we'll consider it, but typically we don't get down to that level of detail, but we'll certainly put it on the table here for discussion.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Oh, one more question. Are you still there?
Yeah.
Okay, protocol. Did I hear you say that the protocol is coming in the new year?
Yes.
Yay.
I'm not going to give you a date, but it is going to be in the new year.
Well, I'm also concerned. I didn't receive any. I am the counselor. I am the ED. I am the contact here for the Credit Coalition, and I only received information about this call yesterday through ARP. So if y'all sent this out earlier, I'm kind of concerned that I am a HECM counselor and I'm not.
Well, are you the contact person in the HCS system?
Yes.
Okay. I don't know why it wouldn't have gone to you.
Okay.
But again, it will be available on our HUD website.
Well, it's not. I don't mind not having the PowerPoint during our conversation. What I'm worried about is if I'm not getting the emails, and it sounds like a lot of other folks didn't either. I know Buzz is probably the contact person for his agency. If he didn't get it either, then some of us are missing from the email list. So,
what do you think?
I'd say work with their HUD point of contact.
Yeah, that's probably the best thing, to work with your HUD point of contact to make sure that the information is correct on HCS.
You mean Gary Thacker for Denver HUD?
Sure.
My contact? Okay. Okay. Thank you, ma'am.
Mm-hmm.
Merry Christmas.
Thank you. Thank you. You too.
The next question comes from Barbara Stoker.
This is Barb Stuckey. I think it's probably me. I hate to kind of go back to the beginning here, but I'd appreciate it. I'm still trying to figure out when this kind of situation is suitable. And short of flipping or scams when it might not be suitable, just as a basic choice. Could you give me a couple of examples, just simple, of how a person would use this and sort of things to be watching out for, again, just in terms of decision-making short of scams?
You mean HECM for purchase in general?
Yeah, it's like, why would a person want to do this? Can you give me a couple of...
Well, for instance, a couple lives right now in Kansas, but their kids all live in Maryland, and they want to sell their... They want to live closer. They want to be closer to their grandchildren and whatever, for whatever reason. And they want to sell their house in Kansas and buy a house in Maryland to be closer to their family. There are cases, where people are, an elderly couple lives in a house that's just way beyond what they need now. It's just too big, and they want to downsize.
How does it work? So then why wouldn't they just sell the house and move to Maryland?
Well, that's what they're going to do, and they're going to buy a house in Maryland using a reverse mortgage so they don't have any kind of mortgage payment once they move there.
Okay, so the idea is that somebody is buying a house that costs more than what they currently own.
I mean, you can definitely run into that situation, but we're not here to restrict or put limitations on the amount of a house. That will just depend on the market at the time and what they're agreeing to do. You could run into a situation where if it's a home that has handicapped facilities in them, and if this couple, one is in a wheelchair and they need wider doors, and there's someone else who's also looking at this particular property. It might get into a bidding kind of thing, and someone may agree to pay a higher price for it. We can't stand in the way of something like that. What we're saying is the intent of the program is definitely there for those who want to acquire a primary residence. They want to downsize. They want to move closer to individuals, family members, for health care reasons, for whatever the reason is, it's available. This is something that, as we understand it, currently occurs right now, where if a senior wants to move, they certainly can right now, but then they're having to turn around and paying an additional cost of closing a reverse mortgage. This program is designed to pull it all together. So it's one set of fees that they're having to pay.
What about, you hear a lot about in the paper where people are having difficulty selling their current home, but they want to move to their new places. There's some, the current home has to be sold before they move into the new one, or what? How does that work?
Well, they may have another source of funds other than the sale of their home. It's just that they may have to bring money to the purchase, and usually it's from the sale of their home, but it could be other sources.
And when they obtain this home, they're actually acknowledging and certifying that this is in fact going to be their primary residence for them.
Right, and the lenders are going to be required to validate that they've moved in within that 60-day time frame.
But they basically either have to be able to sell the house that they're currently in or have some other funds to fully pay off that loan at the time that they make that new purchase with the reverse.
They don't have to pay off their existing mortgage. There's nothing that prohibits them from owning more than one home. The key is that they must occupy the home that they purchase using HECM proceeds. And, you know, whatever funding source they use has to be their own funds, whether they get it from the sale of another home or from their savings account or investments that they have. Now, the exception would be if the existing home that they own and are having trouble selling has an FHA-insured mortgage against it, because FHA requires that the home that is insured be the primary residence. And so clearly they can't have two primary residences. So if it's an FHA-insured on the existing property, they do need to sell it, pay off that loan prior to the HECM for purchase.
All right, thank you.
You're welcome.
Is there another
Your next question comes from Jeannie Weber.
Hello.
Michael, thank you very much. I apologize for butting in the way I did because I'd forgotten about the protocol. I just wanted to repeat the telephone number for the report for seniors.
I'm sorry, you wanted to do what?
Have the telephone number repeated. There was an 800 number given.
Oh, right. That's if you want to report any kind of fraud or abuse. You could call the HUD's Inspector General hotline. And that number is 1-800-347-3735.
Thank you.
Uh-huh.
Your next question comes from David Mandel.
Yeah, hi. A quick comment that on the mention about counseling people in other states. I mean, we've always been very, very hesitant to counsel in other states about HECM, just because even not regarding the loan, other things that are surrounding the borrower's loan and other things in their life are very much dependent on state law, and we don't feel we have the ability to do that for other states. And I would favor making that a practice. And also, people were kind of chuckling about older folks being first-time home buyers. I can think of lots of reasons why older people might want to be first-time home buyers. To mention one, a home is an exempt asset in regard to eligibility for a lot of public benefits, whereas a small saving amount of savings would not be. But that really leads to my question, which is that I don't understand the rationale for not allowing any kind of subordinate loans behind a reverse mortgage in the purchase, and also in some ways in the existing program. So they are allowed a subordinated existing lien is allowed behind a reverse mortgage, I understand, in the traditional sense, but not a new one. And I don't really understand the rationale for that either, because this program of being able to purchase is very nice for folks who have a house that they can sell and then use the proceeds toward a new one, or people who have a lot of savings. But you're leaving out a whole huge community of people who would like to buy a house and they may or may not have had one in the past, but they have a relatively low income, so they can't afford a traditional loan, but they don't have the savings to put in to make up that difference, and that's a significant amount. If there's a lender that's willing to do a subordinated loan, and in some cases that might be perhaps a local housing authority with a program of silent seconds for low-income buyers, why not allow that with a reverse mortgage? I don't understand the rationale, and is there any chance that that will be changed?
Yeah, and we talked about this a little bit earlier. There is a chance that it will be changed, but not at the early stages of the program. There are a couple of reasons. Number one, it is because it's a new program, and we really feel that we need to keep it as tightly reined as possible, so that we can see how things are moving, so that we can develop a little bit of a portfolio and just review what's happening under tighter guidelines. If we're comfortable with what's happening, then we'll look to loosen the guidelines in some areas if we see there are certain markets that are not being served or being neglected. But also, the flip side is that there is so much potential for abuse, particularly in today's market. We have been in conversations with the Office of Investigator General, the FBI, who is also very interested in consumer protections, particularly seniors, and other federal agencies, who are all keenly watching what's going on. And, you know, it might be a case of, you know, the pendulum swinging the other way now because of everything that's happened. But, we really feel at this point that we need to keep the program as tightly wrapped as possible. It's more of a consumer protection measure, and giving us the ability to make sure that we're comfortable with the way the program is going before we start making it more available.
And this also, by the way, impacts our ability to try to help people who are threatened with foreclosure now, for whom a reverse mortgage could be probably the only way that they might be able to save their homes, but only if some kind of a small subordinate lien goes with it, either one that they can afford the payments on or one that's deferred, that's also deferred.
Well,
I think that's a real possibility, but it's just that we're running into this rule that I just don't understand why that wouldn't be allowed.
Well, if they're avoiding foreclosure, we're presuming they own a home.
That's correct. They own a home. The value's dropped quite a bit. They can't afford the payments. But, you know, the typical story, though. There are a million and one variations. But
they are using HECMs to deal with foreclosure issues or avoidance thereof, loss mitigation and that kind of activity. But that now you're crossing over from HECM for purchase to the regular HECM program.
Right. But I'm just pointing out that we're running into the same problem there that the mortgagee letter 2006-20 is interpreted as saying that you're not allowed to have any kind of a secondary lien, and that's It's a real shame because of that people are losing their houses, and that wouldn't necessarily have to be the case.
Well, we'll have to look at that. But for now, I think we need to keep the focus on HECM for purchase. But we do appreciate that, and we will certainly take it into consideration.
Whom can I talk to about that?
you can send an email to Donna Tomposky.
Okay, I think I have that email.
Okay.
Your next question comes from Alvin Berry.
Yes, excuse me. Thank you, Calvin Berry. We're in Los Angeles here. I have a couple of questions for those of you on a panel there. This is obviously a program for clients that have their own money, which you guys have stated that they apparently need the difference between the HUD maximum loan limit. Here is 417 and the amount of money that they qualify for. First question is there a FICO score now since this is a purchase? Is there a FICO score required by the lender? Someone did mention that they will pull the credit report, so that's why I asked that question. And you mentioned that any government loans, federal loans, would have to be paid, but what about other liens, credit card debts, or anything like that that might be, let's say, a charge-off? Are those things going to be required to be paid off? Okay, let's deal with that one first.
No, there's not a FICO score that's associated with the HECM for Purchase program. My statement concerning looking at the credit report, that's what we do currently. That's what lenders do currently with the program. They're required to pull a tri-merge credit report, and it's just to look to see what kind of credit history. I mean, the lender, even though for FHA, it's not a credit or income qualified based program, they're still looking to determine payment history. And if they are federal debts are also on that credit report, they have to be addressed. And when you're talking about credit cards or charge-offs, unless it's going to result in a money judgment, something where that creditor can come after their collateral, that home, something like that, the lender has the discretion to require a payoff at closing. If it's a federal lien or something along those lines, they must address those issues, especially if it's tied to the collateral itself.
Okay. Thank you. Second question, you mentioned the flipping, and we're supposed to try and recognize, if you will, if this might be a flipping property. Now, is there a minimum time required that the client must live in the property before they can sell it? Under the existing program, there's no prepayment penalty. If they're there for whatever length of time, let's say it's a year, they can sell the property without a penalty. Now, is there a minimum amount of time on the purchase?
How long are they? HECM. I just want to clarify that you're talking about, so we have a HECM mortgager. They've already acquired the property. And
no, they purchased the property under this HECM purchase plan, and the purpose is to flip. You know, as you mentioned earlier, there are all kinds of scams going on out there today. So if they purchase the property with the intention of flipping, is there a minimum amount of time that the senior must live in the purchase property?
Well, I have to say that's an awfully expensive way to flip a property based on the fees and everything that are involved, you know, upfront fees with the HECM program. But we had not made a statement that there was a minimum required time that the senior must live in the home after taking the HECM. And if the senior wants to sell the property afterwards, and as long as the HECM is paid off, that would be our primary concern. But we would hope that seniors, if they wanted to flip a property, would find a more affordable financing mechanism than a HECM. Thank you.
All right. And then one final question. Will there be a loan calculator for the counselors to try and determine whether they qualify? It's determined by age, maximum loan limit, and how much they owe on the property under the existing HECM program. So Will there be a calculator for us to use as counselors?
That's a good question. I mean, there's currently the RMA software that's out there. I don't know. Would that work? Wouldn't that work the same as refinance HECM?
The qualification requirements are the same in terms of age, and the only difference is that the sale price comes into the max claim.
I think there are some probably proprietary products or companies that are out there that are trying to use our guidelines and develop tools of this manner to assist lenders and counselors. HUD itself, we are going to have to look at our own software and try to make a determination of how to make a change, but that won't be right away. That will take some time before we're able to do that.
Without that, we won't be able to tell a client whether they qualify.
When you say qualify, are you referring to if they're going to have enough money to come to the table? Because overall, I think that's really the one dynamic feature with the purchases that require investment and knowing if, in fact, they're using their principal limit to pay off an existing home, which is what we do currently. So it's a traditional. They can use their proceeds to pay off an existing lien. The difference is that they're agreeing to pay and buy a home. There's a sales price that's associated with. Are they going to use their HECM proceeds to cover that difference? Now, is that what you're referring to?
Let's just run through an example real quick. Let's say in California we have the 417 maximum loan limit, and the minimum age is 62, which means that there's less money available for out of that 417 for that home for that purchase HECM client. Then how much does that client qualify for out of the 417, even though they may sell another home or have that money in their, you said they need to have their own funds. With that, how much do they still need, to pay down towards the new home? And let's say, the home is $500,000. How will we know, or do we need to know, how will we know how much they need to pay down to qualify for the program based on that young age and the sale price and the HUD maximum loan limit?
The calculators that are in use today where you input borrower age and loan limit happened to be area of the country at one point. But those calculators, whether it's a home purchase or a refinance, are going to have the same, for the most part, the same principal limit, for the most part.
Yeah, it'll be close.
It'll be very close. So if you put in a $500,000 home for a 62-year-old, the principal limit is going to be the same whether it's a refinance or a purchase. What's different is that if it's a purchase of a $500,000 home and they're only eligible for a principal limit of $200,000, you would subtract the principal limit from the sales price. And that's assuming old.
So that's okay. Then they would have to come in with the 300. We just back it out that way.
So I actually think you can. I think you'll be well served by existing calculators. One thing that might change is that right now we're saying that they have to come in with 300,000. The fact is that for a purchase, the closing cost could be a little higher. So instead of 300. It might be $310,000, something like that. But the closing costs may be higher for a purchase. But the calculation of the principal limit is the same, whether it's a purchase or a regular HECM.
Right. So, that's why we would also encourage you to be aware of what your state requirements are. So,
if you can determine pretty close to what their principal limit is, and then, you know the cost of the property, then you just have to look at the other fees.
Mm-hmm.
That's just another way of saying what Kathy was just saying. Add the fees on top of that, and then you'll come up with a pretty good estimate as to what their down payment needs to be.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Your next question comes from Robert Wright.
Thank you very much. I just need to see if I can get the follow-up actually on the previous question, an example of how I'm just not really fully understanding. And let's take with a typical reverse mortgage. We have a 70-year-old homeowner with a $200,000 property, no mortgage. They're eligible, let's say they're eligible for a $100,000 lump sum. Now we have a 70-year-old homeowner going to buy a $200,000 property. How are you saying that they have to bring in a down payment or enough money to lower the equity to the point where I'm just not on this. Could you just sort of give me a made up example of a 70-year-old going to buy a $200,000 property?
Sure.
What their typical down payment requirement would be, so that for some reason I'm just not understanding. And I've been working with this reverse mortgage since the beginning. And I know, like I say, if a 70-year-old that's in a property,
right, it's,
that has no mortgage, they with a $200,000 property, let's say they're eligible for a lump sum of $100,000, just roughly 50% of the value of the property.
That's right.
Okay, now we have a 70-year-old buying a house next door, $200,000, they're a first-time home buyer. What are their financial requirements to purchase that property?
Well, their financial requirements are pretty high, actually, and that's the big difference is the existing homeowner has lived in the home, has built that equity. They've owned the home, they've built the equity. A new home buyer has zero equity going in. So
they have to inject the equity to the point where they would be eligible, let's say, for the reverse mortgage if they were doing the refinance. They have to inject that amount of equity?
Because they're making a purchase. So if you've got a home that's being sold for $200,000,
right,
and you the cash available to you through HECM is $100,000, then you've got $100,000 left on the sale price of that home that has to come from somewhere.
Okay, so that's
that
it.
That has to come from the buyer.
Okay, so it's not the typical $200,000 sale price. You need $20,000 as a first-time home buyer to buy this property, generally speaking.
No, and the difference
It's not that. We're not looking at it like that.
We are not, no.
Okay.
This HECM product is exactly the same as any other in terms of you're going to get the amount that you're eligible for. You're not going to have to make any payments on that until, you die or you
right.
get the house. So all of that remains the same. But the huge difference is, because this is a purchase transaction, you're most likely going to have to come in with a pretty substantial down payment, which is why we made the statement earlier. We don't expect that there will be too many first-time home buyers. Because
okay.
I think most people are going to wind up getting that large a down payment probably from the sale of a previous home.
Okay, okay.
I would anticipate that anyone who has $100,000 or more in savings probably did own a home previously at one point okay. in their lives.
Right.
To expand a little bit on the example, not only would this person on the $200,000 home who is eligible for $100,000, this is just round figures for discussion.
Right. Mm-hmm.
If they get $100,000 through the HECM and the purchase price is $200,000, not only do they have to bring in the $100,000 to make up the difference for the purchase price, but they also have to make sure that they have sufficient funds to cover the closing costs.
Right, exactly.
And any other loan-related fees.
So that's the big difference is that they have to bring a large portion of that.
Right.
To the table.
And if they can't do that, then their other option is to go the conventional route where they take out a loan and they only have a small down payment, but then you're looking at a forward mortgage where they have to make
right, exactly.
payments like a mortgage.
Okay. Also, you had mentioned there's no 3-day right of rescission. Now, the right of rescission, is that federal regulation or state law where if you sign a contract, you have 3 days to sleep on it and cancel it out or what have you?
Federal.
Is that a federal?
That's a federal requirement.
That's a federal requirement, but right. It's been waived for this particular program?
I'm sorry, say that last part again.
It's been waived, the federal requirement where a typical home buyer has 3 days to think it over, to cancel out the contract. You're saying with this reverse mortgage purchase that home buyer does not have that option. Once they sign, they're basically committed.
The right of rescission is overseen by the Federal Reserve Board of Governors. And
okay.
That's their particular requirement. They oversee the guidelines for right of rescission. But when you're purchasing a home of this kind, you don't have an opportunity to back out. You're acquiring a new property, in a sense. And I'm just taking a shortcut to explain it. I'm sure
right.
You have pages in legal terms.
Basically, a right of rescission is only available if you currently have a mortgage and another mortgage is going to be placed on your property, or currently own a property and another mortgage is going to be put on your property.
Okay.
So in this case, you know, they're only just purchasing that property. They don't own... mostly you see right of rescission in cases where in a home equity line, in a second mortgage, in HECM
okay.
refinance,
okay.
because
okay.
you already okay. own that property and another mortgage is being placed against that property.
And actually, to your point, you said, and they can't back out of the contract, that's a little different. We're talking about right of rescission around the mortgage financing.
Right, that's what yeah, exactly.
It's a sales contract,
right.
And I'm not sure if it's state law, but there is a right of rescission to a sales contract,
right.
not
mm-hmm.
to a
okay.
Purchase mortgage.
Right.
And
a right of rescission is after you've signed the closing.
Yeah.
You know,
that's
you've
correct.
Gone to closing
right.
on that you have 3 days to get out of it.
Right.
Okay. Okay, well, you sure clarified that for me because I could not figure out how this purchase was going to work. But now I do realize the person needs to bring, basically buy down that equity to the point where
exactly.
it's at the level of they would have no more payments. Okay, well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Right on.
Your next question comes from Karen Blankenship.
Hey, I have a quick question. Well, actually, I've got a few questions. Is there going to be a different certificate for this, or is it the same certificate?
It's going to be the same counseling certificate that you're currently using.
Okay. And just to clarify on the HECM first and second, are you saying that MIP insurance is the second lien?
No.
And what is the second lien? I'm a little confused on that.
The second mortgage is in place, and it's rarely, if ever, used. It's only used under the circumstances where HUD is advancing payments because the lender became default. They were unwilling or unable to.
Oh, okay. So the MIP insurance is what puts that in practice. That's why it's guaranteed. So it's guaranteed with a second lien if it has to be. If it has to be used, correct?
Make that statement again.
The lien's on there only for it. So how is it worded? Do they sign two liens and the second lien is only when it has to be used by HUD only?
Yes.
Okay.
You are correct. There's documents.
And that's
notes.
True for all HECMs.
Okay.
So
I never knew that. That's good news. I mean, that's good to know. Okay, and nonprofits, we're doing all this counseling and a lot of us are getting funding from HUD to do the counseling and now we're going to be required to do more counseling for HECM to purchase along with the regular HECM and a little bit of pre-purchase added in there, which is typically not a problem, but it sounds to me like it's going to take longer. Are you guys going to fund us a little bit more money for that?
Talk to your congressman.
And you know, this is a lot of work.
That's right. Well, you know, now you can charge fees for HECM counseling.
We can, but I'm not going to charge a fee to a little old lady who's on a Social Security fixed income. Sorry.
Yeah.
Not going to do it. I'm going to let HUD do that. I'm going to let HUD pay us that.
Okay.
I just can't. I don't have the heart to charge somebody $125 when they can't barely make their living expenses. The recordation fees and transfer fees, Does anybody know how I can find out if we have those in Florida? Because I believe they're different from state to state.
Your recorder of deeds or recorder of, I know up here they're called recorder of deeds. It might be called something else down in Florida. But, you know, under your county government,
Yeah, and typically these are going to be additional fees that might be charged to our clients?
They will be charged.
Okay, but they're not part of the software right now.
I'm sorry?
They're not part of the software that we do for HECM comparisons.
Okay, well, you can find out what they're going to charge locally and add it in.
Okay, just, and you know, if y'all are going to change the software to help enhance it for the purchase, that'd probably be something really cool to add. Like just a generic amount, not a specific amount, because I know state to state it's going to be different.
We'll take that under consideration. Thanks.
Great. And I think that's it. I think all my other questions got answered. Thank you. Oh, and by the way, I don't know how to do a how to put this task on you, but our counseling agency did not receive these emails or this training material either. We got it from Ertha, who was our HUD rep in Jacks, and we got a notice from Ms. Belling at AARP, but we never got anything from you guys directly.
Well, like I said, talk to your HUD representative, and they can update HCS to make sure that you get these.
And is that we should not go in there and update HCS because that would do something wrong, right?
I don't think you can update that particular field.
Okay, so that has to come from our HUD rep.
Yes.
Okay. That's awesome. Thank you so much. That's all the questions I have.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Your next question comes from Tony King.
I got my question answered by listening. I would just also say that I learned about this through a third party, through my HUD field officer in Columbia, South Carolina. But I will watch for the PowerPoint when you post it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from Karen Stanford.
Hi, this is Karen. I have a couple concerns. One of them is some of these people are not going to be able to afford the taxes and the insurance. They're going to find a little house that's maybe $40,000 or $50,000 here in Minnesota, and the taxes are going to be too high. They should have a budget counseling or be required to get a one-to-one counseling before they even go look for houses, because there's more involved in the house than just having it paid for, and that's my biggest fear.
Well,
we have refinance counseling here for people who have some HUD assistance or HAF assistance, and before they can refi their houses, they have to come in for counseling so they understand what's really going on.
That's certainly a concern for us as well, and we would hope that counselors, when they are talking to purchasers, particularly if they're first-time purchasers. We think existing, you know, anyone who's previously owned a home understands the costs involved in owning that home. But for a new purchaser, that's definitely a consideration and something that we hope the counselors will emphasize in the session. In terms of asking people to go to a counseling session before they even start looking, we can advise people to do that, but we can't control it. So, you know, if they've found a house and they're interested in it, we would just urge them to get to counseling as soon as possible and certainly before they sign a sales contract.
Right, but if they found the house already, they already have a realtor in most cases, and there's nothing we can do to, once they sign a contract with them, they don't understand how much the laws have changed and the rules have changed. I mean, there was never a fee before for the first-time homebuyer to have to pay to a realtor so that they can keep the records at the broker's office. And that's very popular here right now, and it runs anywhere from $150 to $480 per client. And these poor people don't know that. and they have no idea what's really going on. It's changed a lot in the last 5 years. And that's one of my concerns, is that that's part of what's going to happen. I'll see them after the damage has been done, and you can't undo a contract that's already been signed.
Well, I mean, you can. They could lose their deposit, possibly.
I'm not talking the house. I'm talking the realtor.
Oh, the realtor.
Because if they go into a house and talk to a realtor, if that realtor gives them any kind of information, it becomes a dual agency if they're not represented by a realtor prior to that.
Right.
And then that realtor gets both commissions. And by rights, he cannot give any information to either one. Anyhow, in Minnesota. So it's
right.
Really a large concern for me. I know that a lot of these aren't going to happen, but I am a first-time home buyer counselor, and I do pre-purchase schooling. And they wouldn't need that, but they would need one budget counseling to make sure that they can really afford what goes along with purchasing a house.
Right.
Because a lot of them don't make a lot of Social Security, but they think this is an easy way out if they're a little bit older.
Well, that's true, but keep in mind also that they're going to have to be walking in with a down payment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in most cases, a pretty substantial down payment.
Right, but the houses here are pretty reasonable right now because of the foreclosure. I mean, I'm seeing houses that are selling for $35,000 here.
Mm.
And once the rates go back up again, and they will, it's going to go a lot higher for taxes. And that's going to hurt a lot of people because they don't plan for that. They have no idea.
Well, that's all we can do is to hope that they get that information through counseling.
Right. So, well, I just, like I said, I'm hoping that counseling comes before the house instead of the other way around. So.
Right. Well, we are.
Thank you for listening.
Thank you.
Take care.
Your next question comes from Gail Nelson.
Gail. Oh. Hello, Gail.
Atlanta. Gail?
You can cancel that. Gail stepped out.
Your next question comes from Della Gallant.
Hello.
Hello.
This is Della. And my question may have been answered. I'm in North Carolina, and I only do face-to-face interviews. I don't deal with the different states. And I'm wondering if I have someone in North Carolina who is moving to another state, and I'm not familiar with any of their rules or their regs and the things that they have to have, would it not be better for them, for me to refer them to a counselor in the state that they intend to move in?
I think that's a very good idea.
And I did not get the PowerPoint either, okay?
Oh, boy.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Della.
I know. I heard about it.
Your next question comes from Rhonda Rivera.
Hello, Rhonda.
Hi. We have a couple of questions. Quick question on the issue with HCS, or comment I want to make. Agencies can still make changes, just don't hit the validate button. That's the problem.
Mm.
I just wanted to make that clear. So,
thank you.
So, because I don't want all those phone calls. Anyway, go ahead, Cindy. Since you had a question with regard to a 1-4 unit.
Hi, this is Cindy with Rhonda. I have the question regarding that, you know, how do you determine when you have like a 4 units, okay? Do you have to specify which unit you're going to live in? And suppose if that unit has a 1 2-bedroom, 1 3-bedroom, and 1 4-bedroom, and 1 2-bedroom. So can the person live in any unit and get the maximum 417 in for the maximum loan or whatever the value, or how do they determine that? Is it confusing?
If I understood you correctly, if someone is looking to acquire 1-4 units, of course they have to be owner-occupied. The intent is to own one of those and occupy one of those units. But the lender is then relying on the appraisal report.
Okay.
The job of that appraiser is going to make that determination, how many units and what kind of units. Are we talking about if it's 1 to 4, are they classifying as a condo? Because then there might be other requirements that they have to look
at. No, not condo. It will be single family, 4 units. We have it in California. We have a lot, you know. And that, in that case, if one unit, I know we have guidelines that one unit is 300, and then a second unit, I mean, if they have two, it'll be like a 4, the 3, it'll be 500,000.
Even
and
though it's a multi-unit, as you're describing, the maximum claim amount, no matter if it's a 2, 3, or 4 unit, will still be based upon the 417.
The 417, okay. So in that case, a person can live in any unit, correct?
Yes.
One unit, so you can live in a smaller unit. Doesn't matter.
Yes, the intent should be to live in one of the units, yes.
Oh, okay, that's clear then. So they just only go maximum with their 417, whatever the price came in at 800,000, but the maximum will be only 417 for that.
So this program is going to be based upon a one unit instance, which will be 417.
I know, I see, but that one unit, but they're different. They're large and they're small, so are they going to, does it matter?
But which, maybe I just don't understand the type of residence, but if they are buying this type of property and there's more than one unit, they have to be occupying one of those units, and that's the unit that we would be using or that appraiser is looking to determine the value of it.
Okay, well, then that's it. That's all my questions.
They're saying the value of all four, but for FHA guidelines, it's still the max claim was the
five. Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Your next question comes from Doris Rashaw.
Hello?
Ms. Rashaw, your line is open.
Yeah.
Your next question comes from Karen Singleton.
Yes, ma'am. I just wanted to let everyone know that the RMA software does have a feature to determine the HECM for home purchase.
Yay,
and if you go into the front screen where you enter the client's information, there's a little drop-down box that says HECM for home purchase, and it allows you to put the purchase price in there. And then when you do the calculation, it shows the net amount that would be due at closing.
Thank you, Karen.
Bless you.
Your next question comes from Linda Cade.
Yes,
ma'am, you're live.
The first one is I know currently if someone is married, both parties are encouraged to do the counseling. In this program, if one of the parties is only going to be on the loan, will both be also encouraged to be counseled?
Yes. I mean, yeah, just like a HECM refinance.
Okay. And then the second one is power of attorney. If you know, currently a power of attorney can do the reverse mortgage. Same thing applying for this?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Your next question comes from Josh Asardo.
Gus Acevedo.
Yeah.
Hi, this is Gus Acevedo. Did you say that we can charge, that we can still charge the fee for this type of counseling?
Oh, yes. This is considered HECM counseling. Up to
$125. Yeah. That was it. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
There are no more questions. Thank you, ma'am.
All right. Thank you very much. Thank you, everyone, for joining us this afternoon.
This concludes today's conference call. You may now disconnect.